There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Third and final hour of the show as we build up to our 6 o'clock kickoff. That's 6 o'clock here in the UAE, 3 p.m. Back in the UK. We will, of course, be tuning into Newcastle against Arsenal and then, of course, Watford against Manchester United straight after that. In the world of sport, though, this afternoon, it's Worcester who've made it through to their first T20 finals. They beat Lancashire by 20 runs, so they will play either Sussex Sharks or Somerset, who both go head-to-head in just a few moments' time in the second of the semi-finals. What's happening in the football? Chris McCarty?
Yeah, keeping an eye on Wembley Stadium. It is Tottenham taking on Liverpool. We're into the final 11 minutes of regulation time in this, and it remains Tottenham 0, Liverpool 2. Again, Liverpool excellent today. Not at their fluent best, it's fair to say, but they are on the cusp of coming away not only with 3 points, yet another clean sheet, and yet more proof that they are genuine title challengers. It's 1990, as we said earlier, for the last time that Liverpool won a league title, and okay, we are only 5 matches into a season, but they will sit atop the Premier League with 15 points. Goals today from Jorginho Wijnaldum, his first goal, would you believe, in the Premier League away from home. Newcastle, St James's Park during his spell there, Anfield as well, his first goal on the road. That got proceedings up and running for Liverpool, and then it was Roberto Firmino with the second early on in the second half, which has really, well, what it has done is it's punctured Spurs. Yes, they're in possession now. Yes, they're huffing and puffing. They're trying to get back into this game, but Liverpool look pretty comfortable as things stand then. Tottenham 0, Liverpool 2.
Finished 1-1 between Atletico Madrid and Eibar. We'd sort of given up on that game. It was 0-0 almost to the last couple of minutes.
It was indeed, and yet again Atletico Madrid struggling at the start of this new campaign. I for one thought that they would push, and of course they could still transfer it, you know, turn their form around and become a genuine title challenger, but it's been a sticky start for Diego Simeone's team, and it was a last minute equaliser that saved them from yet more heartache. Eibar it was who took the lead with 3 minutes remaining, but it was Moreno, Borja Moreno, who stepped off the bench to rescue a point for Diego Simeone's men. So Atletico Madrid, not the start that they would have been wanting, and of course with Real Madrid and Barcelona both in action a little later this evening, Atletico Madrid, even at this early stage of the season, could be a million miles behind the top two in Spain.
Stay tuned to Dubai 103.8 for your opportunity to get exclusive coverage of the Premier League here in the UAE, courtesy of our friends at TalkSports. And I can tell you that from 6 o'clock we have Bournemouth against Leicester, we've got Chelsea against Cardiff, we've got Huddersfield against Palace, we've got City against Fulham. They're all 6 o'clock kickoff, so if there's any goals in them, you'll hear about them here first on Dubai Eye. But what's our feature game?
Our featured match is at St James's Park. It is Newcastle United taking on Arsenal, and delighted to say that, as he always does on a Saturday at about 5 past 5, Adam Bridge now joins us live on the line. A very good afternoon to you, Adam.
Why I bet.
Yes, why I to you as well, Adam. How are you, my friend? You're obviously enjoying your time up in the northeast of England this afternoon.
Who doesn't? Bit too close to Scotland for my liking, but there we go.
It is a great night out, I've heard as well, is Newcastle. But of course, the natives, all eyes will be on the football field from 6 p.m. over here in the UAE, 3 p.m. back with you in the UK, Adam. Rafa Benitez, coming for a lot of criticism in recent weeks for the manner that he has set up his sides in the big games. Chelsea went to St James's Park, and essentially what he did was just shut up shop. He parked the bus, or a couple of buses. He did likewise at Manchester City. Your thoughts today, though, does he go out and try and attack Arsenal?
Well, I mean, you've got to remember, he's played 3 sides that have finished in the top 5 last season, so he can't be foolish about how he approaches those games, whether he's right or wrong. I mean, hindsight would say that possibly he got them wrong, but prior to those fixtures, you wouldn't have expected him to go gung-ho on the basis that they could have suffered for it. I think what he's looked at today is the fact that Arsenal, although they've won their last 2 games, have conceded 8 goals already this season, and defensively they're not at their best. They've yet to keep a clean sheet. So if ever there was an opportunity in front of, you know, 55,000 baying Geordies to actually try and attack, today could well be that day. And looking at the team he's picked, I think he's decided probably to go for it.
What about Mesut Ozil, Adam, back into the starting lineup for Arsenal? There was rumours circulating that he'd had a fallout with Unai Emery. Were they ever corroborated? Did you ever hear anything off the back of that, and expecting him to make a positive impact on his return to the side?
Well, Emery, of course, has come out quite publicly and denied all of that stuff. Is it unlike Ozil to fall out with his manager? I think it's fairly standard, really. I think he falls out with his players as well, based on his work rate at times. What kind of contribution will he make? Well, funnily enough, it's the first time he's ever actually played at St James's Park, because he tends to have those mystery illnesses when they have that fairly lengthy journey up to Newcastle. But he performs quite well against them when he takes them on at the Emirates. What will he deliver today? Well, I think Emery's hoping that the international break may well do him a favour, and not obviously playing international football anymore may help him contribute a little bit more to this Arsenal side. But I think, you know, what we've seen when under pressure, Mesut Ozil crumbles. He's a player who drifts in and out the games. He's a player who chooses to play when he wants to, and I think it's very much about whether Mesut Ozil fancies contributing to the game today, or whether maybe it's a little bit too physical for him, or whether actually he's in the right frame of mind for it. He's not my favourite footballer. I think he's a bit of a waster, if I'm brutally honest with you, but we'll see what he's got to offer today. It's not often he performs in away games, but maybe against Newcastle is the one chance to do it.
Yeah, give us your appraisal, if you can, Adam, of Unai Emery's start to life for Arsenal. I've got to be very honest and say that I'm not convinced, in all honesty, by Unai Emery, but Arsenal fans are letting him, and it's only right that they give him a chance after, what, 22 years of Arsene Wenger. What have you made of the opening few weeks under Unai Emery?
Well, when you consider he's the most successful coach in Europe in the last 5 years, bar none, you have to give him a certain amount of time, and I think you allow him a certain amount of respect in that case. You know, he's named an unchanged side today, so maybe he's finally reaching the point where he knows his best team. And I think that best team has to contain Aubameyang, and it has to contain Lacazette, because they're the two most devastating players that they possess. You know, I haven't been overly impressed. I thought West Ham were pretty unlucky, actually, to lose. And I think if they'd taken their chances, they could well have got something out of that game. But they have won their last two, so they have a little bit of momentum going for them. But, you know, the same issues that were always there haven't been fixed. It's a porous Arsenal defence. When it's put under pressure, it creaks and it concedes. And I think there was a hope that Unai Emery was the solution to that problem, because the only reason it wasn't fixed in previous years was because of the stubbornness for 22 years of Arsene Wenger. But the same problem is still there. You know, Granit Xhaka still gives the ball away. Ozil, as we've mentioned, sometimes doesn't deliver. So, you know, all those concerns are still within the Arsenal ranks. He's, you know, spent some money and he's changed some players around, but fundamentally I think the same issues are still there.
The in vogue tactic of playing out of the back, Adam, I suppose ironic given the fact that Petr Cech is the least skillful or predisposed goalkeeper in the Premier League to actually carry out and execute that tactic. Do you see that being an issue for Arsenal moving forward and through the season? Are we going to be seeing a lot of goalkeeping blunders given what Petr Cech has been asked to do, and given how ill-suited he is to actually do it?
Well, he made six direct errors last season that led to goals in the Premier League, and we, I think, saw a bit of fallibility in Petr Cech last season. For me, I don't understand why you go out and buy a keeper like Leno and suddenly find himself on the bench. You know, he's not had a look in yet in any of the fixtures so far. And for me, he would be a better option. If that's the way Emery wants to play, I would feel a little bit more confident with him instead of Petr Cech. I think Petr Cech is past his best. He's been a brilliant servant. But actually, if Arsenal want to become a force again, they need to look forward. And if this is going to be Emery's tactic, then I think Leno may serve that better.
Give us the team news then, Adam, before we let you get going. Newcastle, four changes, I believe, from the team that lost last time out.
Yeah, it looks like he's going 4-4-2 today. So, I mean, he's arrested Rondon, who clearly he feels has had a fairly hectic international week with Venezuela. Kennedy as well, dropping down to the bench today, as has Kieran Clark. Good news is Jonjo Shelvey returns, but only fit enough in Benitez's mind for a place on the bench. So Dubravka's in goal. It's a back four today then of Yedlin, Vassells, Fernandez and Dummett. And then Richie returns from injury as well. Hayden is back from suspension. He's alongside Diarmé in the centre with Murphy out wide. And then Perez and Hosselu up front. So going with two strikers. So it looks like an offensive side from Rafa Benitez to really try and get at that Arsenal back line. As you say, Arsenal, they're unchanged. So Cech's in goal, Bellerin, Mustafi, Sokratis and Monreal, Xhaka, Guendouzi, then Ramsey, Ozil, Aubameyang and Lacazette leading the line. Torreira is fit enough for the bench. And Mkhitaryan's there as well. Now, I remember, I'm pretty sure after the transfer window last season, a certain Chris said to me that Mkhitaryan would get at least 10 Premier League assists for Arsenal before the season was
and
out.
Goals.
And I'm sure we had a little
goals,
bet
Adam.
On that. And
I think we
and
did.
My stats tell me that
it.
Didn't happen.
Oh, jeepers. Well, next time I'm in London, Adam, I shall have to take you out for... That sounds weird, but I will take you out for dinner or something, Adam. I promise you of that. We need to think of a nice new little friendly wager. I'll think of one this week. I'll be on Twitter and I'll reach out to you, Adam. Enjoy the game. Before I let you go, though, Newcastle-Arsenal. It is the featured game here on Dubai 103.8. Give us a prediction. Who's winning this one?
Do you know, I've got a funny feeling today that Newcastle might just snatch this. They beat them, of course, back in April. It was the first time they'd beat them for almost 8 years. And I've just got a funny feeling we might see something similar today. But we're going to get goals, so I'm going to go 3-2 to Newcastle.
Oh, what a game. What a game. And I tell you, if Newcastle do win 3-2, it'll be a fine night out on the tune the night. That's for sure. Adam, enjoy it, my friend. Top stuff.
Cheers, boys.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
The game is on. It's almost up, though, for Tottenham. 4 minutes left or so, Chris McCall.
Yeah, 91 minutes on the clock. I've got to say, Tottenham 0, Liverpool 2, but Liverpool could have been out of sight. They really could. They've had chance after chance after chance. Wrong options at times. Good goalkeeping from Michael Vorm have kept the scoreline respectable and kept Spurs in this. But Liverpool today, again, it's a strange one. Don't think they've been particularly pretty, and I've seen them play better, but they're just so functional and they're effective and they create chances. They've got pace, they've got guile. It's been good today, and they've went to Wembley and they've beaten Tottenham by 2-0, a title rival. Liverpool top the table, 15 points from 5 games. The goals today, Jorginho Wijnaldum, and a goal as well for Roberto Firmino. So Liverpool home and host, that will taste very nice indeed this evening. Jurgen Klopp, I'm sure, will have a good Saturday night out in Liverpool.
Stage 20 of La Vuelta is underway. They're up in the mountains today, 97.5 kilometre mountainous stage, 4,000 metre climb at some point during this stage. It's still Simon Yates, the Brit, who leads the standings at the moment by 1 minute and 39 seconds from Spain's Alejandro Valverde. So we'll keep an eye on that stage for you. Very similar, you know, those mountainous stages to the stages you get here, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed. Well, not very quite. 4,000, did you say?
4,000 metre climb, yeah.
Oh, we've got a goal. Got one back. Oh, I might have just gone a bit too soon. Ooh, an interesting 2.5 minutes ahead. Jurgen Klopp is smiling, but he shouldn't be, because Tottenham have scored, which has relieved me, because Joe Gomez was on my bench for my fantasy football team. So,
is there anything that has happened in this game that doesn't somehow relate to your fantasy football team?
It's a fine finish from Eric Lamela. It's a corner from the left-hand side. The Argentine substitute, oh my goodness, what a finish that is. He's given far too much time. I think it's Daniel Sturridge who watches him as he chests the ball. It is Daniel Sturridge. Get out to him, son. He lets the ball, he chests it, and then on that left foot volley, beautiful, into the bottom corner. Tottenham 1, Liverpool 2. 2 minutes remaining of injury time. We'll keep an eye on this one. But Jeff O'Brien from Onside Sports is alongside us. He was delighted earlier when I called him the mastermind of the Dubai 103.8 UE Road Cycling Championship. So I will continue to say,
pop
we've
that
got
on the business card,
the
Jeff.
Mastermind alongside us.
Oh, I'm going to use that. I should have a Twitter page like that as well.
Yeah, just,
you should, the mastermind.
Below Onside Sport, general mastermind.
That's what you are, Jeff. You were telling us a little earlier. Exciting times. We're moving from 2 stages to 4 stages in this second edition of the race. Of course, giving amateur cyclists a platform, giving them the chance to go and race the beautiful roads that we've got here across the United Arab Emirates and make a bit of a name for themselves.
Yeah, certainly. And to do it in a safe manner. You know, we get fantastic support from all the local authorities here, which has been great. We had that obviously in the first series, and we'll have that again. Looking forward to changing up the disciplines a little bit. Stage 2 is on the 26th of October.
Just to reiterate, stage 1 is October 12th. That is up in Calba.
Correct.
And we're looking at 77 kilometres.
With around about 1,000 metres of climbing. We were talking about 4,000 there for that stage in the Vuelta. We've got a little bit less, but that's still pretty significant.
Yeah.
That is certainly, that'll prove quite challenging for everybody. You know, to not only just do that, but to do that at pace.
And then 2 weeks later, October 26th, we have stage 2. What is the makeup of it? What can we expect?
It's an individual time trial. So this one is flat out for 23 kilometres, I'm sorry. And our host venue is going to be Dubai Parks and Resorts, who are fantastic supporters of us this year. And a sister company of yours, I know.
Yes, indeed.
They've been great to come on board, because we need closed roads and we need somewhat of a technical nature to this TT. and to have a few twists and turns in it for stage two is going to be fantastic.
For the uninitiated, Jeff, that is simply as fast as you can go on a given distance.
Yeah, flat out. Full gas for 23 kilometres. And one of the cool things that we've got this year is for the Vuelta, for instance, and all the Grand Tours, they have a ramp. So you ride up onto the top of the ramp, and then someone holds your bike and they count you down, and the clock goes, and off you go, and you go down the ramp. So we've got that same thing.
Brilliant.
Same thing going on for stage two, which will be really cool and just good fun.
That'll be great to go down and watch.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Surely Chris and I need some kind of face-off in that particular stage.
The time trial.
Surely, yeah.
The time trial. How far is it?
23 Ks.
That's water off a duck's back for you.
It should be.
You said you did the loop.
50k. Yeah.
So you've
I was pushing my back bike by the end of it, Jeff.
Of course
you
were.
But I completed it just about.
So stage two's a time trial. I maybe will pencil that one into our calendar, Jeff.
October, I think that'd be a great idea.
26th. Robbie and I, oof, I can just picture now, us in Lycra. What
an
awful thought that is. Stage three, where do we go from there?
We go to Jebel Jais, the highest mountain in the UAE.
I will be sitting out that one.
Wow, yeah, we'll both be sitting that out. We'll be watching, we'll be cheering on the riders from the sidelines in that particular race.
We might even get you on the zip line. How about that?
I've done the zip line. I'd rather cycle, I think. It scared the bejesus out of me, so it did.
Yeah, just sensational. So, and what we don't want to do with that one is just make it a flat-out time trial up the mountain. So we're going to send them out first from the base of the mountain,
okay,
and so that they've got around about 40 to 50 k's in their legs before they hit the base of the climb. And of course then you've got 24 kilometers to the top
uphill.
That is very much the Alpe de Huez of the UAE, isn't it?
Pretty much, that's it. And we wanted to make sure that it was that little bit more challenging than just doing the climb, so we'll send them out for about 40 odd kilometers and then bring them back.
What date's that, Jeff?
That's on the 9th of November.
I'd get to the base of the hill and that would be me done. Forget the climb. That is incredible.
So they're beautifully staggered out. So you've got stage one on October 12th. You're giving 2 weeks before stage two. You're giving another 2 weeks before stage three. And then stage four, we're back up at Dubai Sports City for the finale.
Yeah, correct. Back at Dubai Sports City. Fantastic host. That one will be, typically it's one for the sprinters. Every Grand Tour has a finish that's for the sprinters. And we're just trying to, once again, just give everybody that same sort of feel. Dubai Sports City, a fantastic host, and it's great to have them back this year.
And the date for that as well, Jeff?
December 7th.
Okay, so a little bit of a wait for us to crown the champions.
Yeah, you know, the calendar here, you mentioned it earlier that this is sports season. We've got all of the sport that's going to happen here from basically now through until the end of April, pretty much.
Yeah.
So it's a jam-packed calendar. And that was one of the things that we obviously had to give some thought to with what we were going to do with our dates. And that really forced us into this window. So this will be our window for all the years moving forward.
December 7th, the finale. How many kilometres is stage four?
93, 94.
Okay.
We're just finalising that one with the Dubai Police, so that's a little bit up in the air.
Plenty of time for you, Chris, to get your legs
moving
up to the challenge.
Waxed. Oh no, that's another horrible thought as well. I just want to ask you, Jeff, as well, we talk often about the growth of cycling and that an awful lot of people are taking to their saddles. Is that what you're seeing out there? Are you seeing a lot of people on a Friday morning getting on their bikes? And what kind of age ranges are we getting kids involved in the sport of cycling?
It's a good question. Actually, I was up at El Kudra at the bottom of the stick today, and it was, you know, standing room only. The car parks are becoming more full, I think, every year. Are we getting kids involved? There's not a lot of kids. I don't see a lot of kids on the Al Qudra track. It'd be fantastic to obviously see a lot more. I know that the Federation have got a very strong junior program, which is focused through the clubs, obviously through the Emiratis. You know, part of what we'd like to be able to do is give those juniors, whether they're expatriates or Emiratis, an opportunity in the future to race in this national championship. It's going to take us a couple of years, but it'll certainly grow.
And what is the plans? Just kind of wrapping up as well, Jeff. What are the plans for the Dubai 103.8 UAE Road Cycling Championship moving forward? Huge step forward from year one, edition one to two. We're now up to four stages. If you give me the utopian vision, what will it look like in 10 years' time? Where do you want to take it?
It'll have prize money. It'll fit into the UCI calendar. So
it'll be a professional event then?
semi-professional. I think it's got to retain its position in the marketplace.
Yeah.
We don't want to go and compete with the UAE Tour and those races within that first-class category. We want to make it so that it retains its identity within the amateur cycling calendar here, and gives, as you rightly said, Chris, all of those local cyclists an opportunity to shine, a platform to show their wares, and to build the sport from the grassroots up.
And maybe qualifying events feeding into it? Would that be the ultimate vision, to have a championship where you actually have to earn the right to be there?
Yeah, and we spoke about that structure last season as well. There's so much cycling that goes on. This one needs to be, and will be, the premier race within the cycling season, and to put a point system in place where there is qualification. That's where we're going. And as I said, to have prize money and to recognise them in that format that's where we're headed.
There will hopefully be an awful lot of people listening to this, and I think it is important that we stress it is for elite amateurs, but it's also accessible to those individuals that get on a bike and have a cycle, whether it be a Friday morning, Saturday morning, or through the week as well. That's important. Anyone listening though, Jeff wants to get involved, what's the best possible way that they can go about doing that?
Premier Online is .com is our registration portal this year. They'll also be doing our timing for us this year. They're a professional organisation. PremierOnline.com. Most athletes know of Premier Online.
Yeah.
It's one of the staples. So go there to see all of the information.
And it's important to point out as well, if you don't have to sign up for the full championship, you can individual races. If there's perhaps something, the time trial or the stage four, the final one, you can do individual races, right?
Yep, you can. And interesting, just before I go, what we did last year or last season was to make this a time-based race. This year what we've done is we've allocated points, so it's not totally time-based. So what that does, it actually leaves a little bit more room for someone to hijack it, and if, you know, if they're fantastic at climbing, it doesn't mean that a climber is going to win. It opens it up to a lot broader spectrum of people that could win. So the timing is professional, as we said, but it's a point-based system for those who win. So you could race three races, win all those three races, and potentially win.
Potentially win it. Robbie, that's what you're going to be doing.
Listen, I'm setting my stall out. My sights are just as high as Jeff's. I've got high ambitions for the UAE Cycling Championship. I'm targeting 2023.
I'm looking forward to it, Jeff. Thank you. Bless you. Thanks for popping in. The UAE Road Cycling Championship, sponsored by us here at Dubai 103.8, giving an opportunity to athletes and cyclists, no matter their age. And I think that's also important to point out. It is age-based as well. Men and women, boys and girls, it is open to all. Jeff, big thank you to you for popping down this afternoon.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Chris, team, thanks very much again. And 103.8, fantastic to see your support again.
Brilliant
Pleasure.
Stuff. Thanks, that is fellas. The voice of Jeff O'Brien, the mastermind of the UAE Road Cycling Championship. Yeah. And in his day job, he works for Onside Sports as well. Thanks, Stay tuned.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
It's the final half hour of the show. We've got Newcastle and Arsenal coming away live from 6 o'clock. If sport is your thing, keep it locked here on The Grill, Dubai Eye 103.8. We're live from Barasti. And for sports fans out there, boxing fans, but just sports fans, make sure you set your alarm clock tonight if you can, nice and early, 6:30-ish, tomorrow morning ahead of a 7 a.m. or predicted around about 7 a.m. start for one of the most anticipated fights of the year.
Tell you a little something about boxing. The greatest moments have always been when the best fight the best. Pay attention. History is about to repeat itself. Canelo versus Golovkin, Saturday, September 16th, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, live on pay-per-view.
Going to pick it through the pieces with the boys in just a few moments' time as to why this is so hotly anticipated. This might give you a flavour.
Just to see Jimmy now, you know, he still looks fit and keen and running.
A couple of days ago, one of the major newspapers in the country wrote the obligatory "Boxing is Dead" column. The conversation continues to build between Canelo Alvarez and Triple G. The next major super fight is clearly on the horizon. Exactly how dead is this sport?
I don't see a way around a Triple G fight at this point. There's a momentum that's taken on a life of its own.
Now it's time for him to take the risk.
I've never seen a vanquished opponent and his trainer.
Fighters should fight each other.
Call out the guy who just beat them.
He gotta fight Triple G.
To fight another guy in the division. I've never even heard of it. But that's how the boxing world is feeling about this. You can see how much it bothers.
You can see how much it bothers them. You can see why there is so much interest in this one. I was out with Jason Lever yesterday celebrating his birthday. We know that Leaves loves his boxing. He described this, and there's a lot of chat around the boxing world at the moment, but he described this as a fight for the purists. Is
yes,
that fair?
Absolutely it is. The first fight, I actually think, let us down a little bit. There was a lot of expectation the first time that Gennady Golovkin and Saul Canelo Alvarez fought. I woke up early for that one. I was a little miffed, to say the least, certainly with the result. I did feel that Triple G had won that fight. We all know, and it's well documented, that it was scored as a draw. Saul Canelo Alvarez is coming off of a ban as well for what he claims was contaminated meat. He failed a drugs test, of course, so it is one for the purists, this. They are both promising a knockout. Then again, they did in the first fight, so it's very difficult to read too much into all of that, but they don't like one another. Gennady Golovkin has said he'll be respectful at the end of the fight, but there's a needle there, and I am really excited. The alarm is already set for me, Tom. I'll be up watching this one because we have been starved a little bit. The heavyweight division is in a little bit of rude health. We know that. We've discussed that. But underneath that, it's been a while since a real top level fight. We had the farce of Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor. I'm excited about this one. I still give Gennady Golovkin, I tip my hat to him. I make him the marginal favourite. But again, it wouldn't surprise me if Saul Canelo Alvarez was to find something and perhaps stop the Kazakhstani knockout specialist in his tracks.
I think age is on Canelo Alvarez's side. Golovkin is nearly 37 now, so he's no spring chicken. And I think, given that Canelo probably has the advantage in terms of speed and has the benefit of that first fight to kind of... Triple G was the aggressor in that first fight and he couldn't knock out Canelo Alvarez. And I get the feeling with the way that boxing is judged and the way that we were all very disappointed to see that scorecard, Adelaide Bird scoring it, 118, yeah, 110 in that first fight. I think to win, Gennady Golovkin needs a knockout. I think it's Canelo's judging panel. Unfortunately, that's just the way this is, and I think the style in which he fights is more conducive to favourable scores with the judges. Gennady Golovkin is a high pressure fighter. He'll get in your face. He's got an incredible knockout power. Canelo is a more flamboyant fighter. He's got probably a bigger bag of tricks, or a more extensive bag of tricks.
I think Gennady Golovkin's the better of the boxer of the two.
I'm not so sure. I think
technically,
Gennady Golovkin is the naturally bigger of the two men. He's the guy that's cutting more weight to make this particular weight they're fighting at. For me, I think Canelo is a more flamboyant fighter, but they're both incredible technicians. There's no doubt about it. What did Floyd Mayweather say about Golovkin? No special effects. Now, I know that was probably just a disparaging remark that Mayweather often comes out with, but...
Stayed well clean of him.
Yeah, of course he did, but he's a much bigger guy. And towards the end of his career, that fight was never going to happen. It was way too difficult. I want Golovkin to win because I think he's a classy guy, and I prefer him as a fighter. I think he's a much better bloke, in all honesty. I think Canelo's a bit of a chancy, shady character. I think there's more to this story. I mean, this whole contaminated meat thing is obviously nonsense. He was caught doping, and he served his time. But for some reason, I think all the acrimony that's coming into this fight is coming from the side of Canelo.
Yeah, I mean, you
Triple
look at...
Triple G's not really one for trash-talking.
No, absolutely
he
not.
He just gets on with it.
He wants to get on with it. He wants to get back in the ring. You look at some of the stats. He's knocked out 87% of his opponents, as Gennady Golovkin. That is the highest ratio of any world middleweight champion in history. And I love this line. One of his sparring partners, who he's worked with over the years, said that he hits you like you owe him money, which I thought was a wonderful little turn of phrase. That Gennady Golovkin possesses so much power. Technically, I actually think he is the more proficient of the two, but as Robbie rightly points out, Saul will do enough, certainly in the eyes of the judges. He will be busy enough. He will be a busy fighter in this fight. And I just think Golovkin, I'm still backing him. I'm still backing him to maybe
don't
stop
you fear
so
another,
late on.
Don't you fear another scorecard controversy?
No, because there's too much pressure. There's so much went into that first fight that I think, who knows? And you're right to point out the age may be an issue. I think we'll have a late stoppage. I really do. I don't think both men make it to the end. I think it could go either way, of course, but it wouldn't surprise me if we have a late stoppage in this one.
They literally don't like each other, do
no,
they?
I they mean,
there is a lot of bad blood in this one. There was a tense way in. The weigh-in was a bit feisty, that's for sure. So it's going to be interesting to see how it pans out as well. That's just one of the big stories in boxing at the moment. The other is one that's been developing whilst we've been on air.
Yeah, amazingly. This has been legitimised by appearing on the BBC website, and they don't tend to carry anything that doesn't have a video of him encountering Manny Pacquiao, of course, who he fought back in 2015, a fight that took years to make. It took all of 6 years to make, and it was a disgraceful disappointment. It was a charade of a boxing match, as it turned out. Now, apparently, he's claiming that they will fight again, not soon, this year. Before the year is out, they will fight again. Now, whether this is more bravado from a retired fighter who wants to make sure that he stays in the public eye. We saw him clamber into an octagon not so long ago and declare that he was going to the UFC to fight Conor McGregor. That was never happening and will never happen. Whether he will actually get back into a ring for Pacquiao 2, whether there'd be an appetite for Mayweather-Pacquiao 2, the problem is boxing fans and just people in general have very short memories. Yeah. And I think there probably would be an appetite for Mayweather-Pacquiao 2. If you analyse and go back and watch that first fight, no one in their right mind would pay $100 to watch those two just dance around one another. I mean, Pacquiao, in fairness to him, was trying to have a fight. Mayweather was doing what he does best, being very evasive and schooling Pacquiao in the art of hitting and not being hit.
Indeed.
But it was not much of a fight, and we wait to see if that one really has legs or whether that's just Mayweather sounding off on his Instagram account, as he is so often prone to do.
Poor old Manny, though. You know, there he is, minding his own business. They all seem to be queuing up for him.
Amir Khan's keen.
We've got this clip here. Amir Khan is obviously on his comeback trail at the moment. He also wants to pop at Pacquiao.
Manny Pacquiao is a great name in boxing, and he's a massive name. We trained together. The fight between me and Manny was talked about years and years ago, but never came through. Now Manny's a free agent himself, and Eddie is with me. I'm promoted by Matchroom. I think those fights can be made, and Eddie would try to get me those big fights that I want. So you've got likes of Manny Pacquiao there. You've got likes of Kell Brook there. I mean, I'm in a division where there's some super names. I'm a 147 fighter. If you look at the top 10 fighters in the division, they're all exciting fights. For example, yesterday Garcia got beat. Maybe that's a fight against him in the future. Or Porter, who's now the new WBC champion. So some big names out there for me, and I want to fight for a title next, hopefully.
You got a lot of options, obviously, but the one fight everybody is desperate to see is with you and Kell Brook. But the 147 limit might be a struggle. It might be a struggle on timings. Is it going to come down to numbers as well in terms of what makes the best financial sense?
What makes the best financial sense. And if it's Manny Pacquiao, we go with that fight. If it's Kell Brook, it could be Kell Brook. But there's other names out there which bring a lot of money to the table as well. So we're just going to sit down with the team. But Kell Brook fight is a fight I would love to have. I think it'll be massive in the UK. It's what the UK fans want also. But my first priority is Manny Pacquiao, because we don't know how long he's got left. And like I said, he's not only a massive name in boxing, he's a legend in the sport, and it's great to be in the ring with someone like him.
He talks an incredibly good game, Amir Khan. Listening to him there, you'd think he was unbeaten and that he had the pick of any fighter he wanted to face. Amir Khan has just beaten Samuel Vargas after a massively long layoff. The pronounced image of him of recent times is lying flat on his back, having been completely and utterly knocked cold by Canelo Alvarez. So I'm not sure that he is the chief bargainer in these negotiations, is Amir Khan. He's talking a good game, and he wants the lucrative Manny Pacquiao fight. Manny Pacquiao as well, who should have retired ages ago, is soldiering on purely for those extra paydays. He's got a large hole of money just disappearing down a sieve over in the Philippines as he pursues his political career, and he needs to top that up with yet another big name fight. But it's all just a little bit sad and disappointing,
isn't
it?
It is exactly that. Sad and disappointing is exactly what it is. And Bob Orem, the promoter of Manny Pacquiao, and Eddie Hearn now for Amir Khan, he'll be getting sitting down in a room somewhere soon. I mean, the fight that does make an awful lot of sense, and it should have happened years ago, is Khan against Brook. That's the fight, Kell Brook. That's the fight that everyone, and certainly in the UK, wants to see. The Manny Pacquiao Amir Khan, we've heard it so often, and it's like, kind of change the record, Amir, a little bit, but hey ho, he's going to make his money, and he's going to talk up fights in order to try and create the hype and in turn then generate the ticket sales. That
stay tuned to hear him on our show in the coming months.
It's good time. I mean, we're talking about this one, we're all looking forward to the fight tomorrow morning, early hours tomorrow morning. This time next week we'll be talking about AJ, won't we?
Pavetkin,
that's next Saturday
next
night.
Next Saturday evening, yes.
Yeah. So yeah, plenty to look forward to.
But that's been a bit odd, that, Tom, because AJ's been talking up Wilder. It's almost like he's got his eye off the ball a little bit, and I'm sure he will still beat Povetkin, but it's unlike AJ.
And he refused to when he fought Joseph Parker and was asked about Wilder and the unification.
Yeah.
He said, Parker's a tough opponent, one match at a time, one fight at a time. I'm not looking for any further than that. So I think Fury coming in and stealing his thunder by ostensibly, even though I'm not sure that has been official yet.
It's not official.
Been made official yet at all. So again, that's odd. That's very strange, because they did that announcement.
Welcome to boxing.
Fury and Wilder, both of whom announced it unofficially, and it has yet to be ratified, and there's yet to be the usual process of a press conference and a date set and a venue booked and tickets going on sale, and none of that sort of stuff has happened yet. So whether that fight is actually happening, even so, that those two just coming together and saying they were going to have a fight has clearly irked AJ. And actually, Povetkin could be a dangerous opponent for him. So, you know, if he loses to Povetkin, and we've seen upsets like that happen in the world of heavyweight boxing, it only takes one punch at the end of the day, that will set him back considerably.
Just to let you know that we're into the final element of qualifying for the Singapore Grand Prix. What have we got? We've got two Ferraris, two Red Bulls, two Mercedes, two Force Indias, one Renault and one Haas. Alonso, Sainz, Leclerc, Ericsson and Gasly are those to miss out. It comes, though, after some drama in the first quarter of qualifying, because Mercedes had all sorts of problems in Q1 and only just scraped through at the end. So they've therefore seemed to have sorted out their problems, and they've gone through, and we should have a pole position qualifier for you before we go off air. Talking of that, we're at just under 15 minutes away from kickoff in our feature game, which will be Newcastle against Arsenal. You heard team news on that one just a few moments ago when we were speaking to Adam Bridge. We'll give you some other team selections for the other kickoffs at 6 o'clock. Plus, remember that Barcelona in action as well over in La Liga at 6:15 this evening.
Let's go!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We're about 8 minutes away from kickoff in Newcastle against Arsenal. Ask Chris to work through some of the other, any sort of big team news for you from the other 6 o'clock kickoffs in just a few moments' time. I just want to hear from the Chelsea boss, Sarri. He's been talking in the build-up to Chelsea's game this weekend about a certain John Terry. There's all sorts of rumours doing the rounds at the moment that Terry might be headed back to Stamford Bridge. Be that in a playing capacity, very unlikely. More likely in a coaching capacity.
The last time I have spoken with him, he told me that he wants to play for another season. But I don't know now the situation. I am talking about 1 week ago. I don't know now the situation, but Chelsea is home, of course.
So you are open to the idea?
Of course, yes, of course.
What would it mean to you if that did happen?
For sure, he will be a point of reference for me. For everybody here, I think.
Do you think there's a chance?
I don't know. He told me another thing. He told me that he wants to play. That I don't know. I have to speak to him.
So let's find out how Chelsea line up. They're taking on Cardiff. That is in London. That's Stamford Bridge. 6 o'clock kickoff. As and when goals going on this one and all the other six, you'll hear them right here on Dubai Eye.
Yeah, indeed. I guess the big team news is that Olivier Giroud has been handed a start by Maurizio Sarri. Alvaro Morata left on the bench by the Italian boss. So Kepa in goals. Back four, Azpilicueta, David Luiz, Antonio Rudiger, Marcus Alonso. Then come the midfield three. High energy in there. Real quality too in N'Golo Kante, Jorginho and Mateo Kovacic, and then it's a front three of Pedro, Olivier Giroud and the man that has made his way into my fantasy football team this weekend, Eden Hazard. As for Cardiff City, Etheridge in goals, it's a back four of Ekuil, Morrison, Bamba and Bennett. Then come the midfield three of Victor Camarasa, the Spaniard, alongside Harry Arter and Joe Rawls, and then Junior Hoylett and Bobby Reid will provide the support to Danny Ward, who will plough a lone furrow up front. I think it will be a long afternoon for Cardiff. I do expect Chelsea to get the 3 points. The big team news, though, Olivier Giroud in, Alvaro Morata out.
Zaha also returning for Crystal Palace. Huddersfield have made one change. They're their opponents this afternoon. They earned a point of last time out at Goodison Park. Elias Kachunga comes in for Adama Diakabi. So that is the one change for Huddersfield. As for Palace, they welcome the return of Wilfred Zaha. He takes over for Christian Benteke. James Tompkins also starts in place of Martin Kelly after missing the last two matches with a calf strain. And Checo Coyote, a former West Ham player, comes in for Jeffrey Schlupp as well. Huddersfield against Palace. Goals, goals and more goals.
I'm expecting that to be a good game. I know Sean O'Shea will be keeping a very close eye on his beloved Huddersfield Town against Crystal Palace. Palace themselves had a little bit of a sticky run. Wilfred Zaha being fit is a huge bonus for Roy Hodgson's men as they look to pick up the 3 points. Elsewhere as well, Bournemouth taking on Leicester. Manchester City against Fulham. That interesting team news in that one. He's rolled his deck as Pep Guardiola, Rob.
Certainly has. Leroy Sané is the name that returns to the first 11 for Manchester City. A lot has been spoken about Leroy Sané. The fallout continues from his failure to make the German national team squad for the World Cup and then supposedly out of favour with Pep Guardiola. His attitude was questioned as well. When you've got that abundance of riches from which to choose, it's not really that surprising that a young player is struggling to break through into the first team. But Sané is back alongside a triumvirate up top with Sergio Aguero, who will play as the centre of that three, and Raheem Sterling as well. David Silva, Fernandinho and Bernardo Silva will play behind those three, and Kyle Walker, Nicolas Otamendi, Aymeric Laporte and Fabian Delph will play across the back four. Edison in goal for Manchester City.
Just looking at the Fulham selection as well, interesting. Ryan Sessegnon looks like he's going to start a left back.
It does, yeah. He's made a name for himself, of course, further up the field. Ryan Sessegnon did break through when he initially did so at left back. So not wholly surprising, but yes, it is a little, given the fact that, of course, last season in the Championship, very much made his name as someone that would affect things further up the football field. But he is in at left back, and I like the look of Fulham. I've got to say, very impressed with the recruitment in the summer. Alfie Mawson, the former Swansea centre half, he comes in alongside Dennis Adoy at the back. It's Sirius Christie at right back. Midfield three, Michel Seri. How on earth Fulham managed to snare him from Nice in the summer? This is a man that was linked with Chelsea, Barcelona just 12 months ago. Kevin McDonald, the Scottish international, formerly of Dundee and Wolves. Then Stefan Johansson, former Scottish Player of the Year, the Norwegian at Celtic Football Club. Then it very much is a very, I guess, continental feel to their forward line. Andrei Sherlo, the German, Alexander Mitrovic, the Serbian, and then Luciano Vietto, the Argentine, who is on loan, of course, from Atletico Madrid. So Fulham looking to give Manchester City a game. That being said, I expect a pretty handsome victory for Manchester
City. I've been
City.
Enjoying Alexander Mitrovic because he has been in my fantasy team, Chris. I know he's a recent recruit to your team. Thoughts on his ability to actually be a relatively prolific player in the Premier League?
Yeah, Fulham built around him, aren't they? And I do expect, hence why he's now in my team, he will get 15 goals. He'll be in double figures, no doubt about that, come the end of the season. Fulham play a beautiful brand of football, and it all goes through him. He's one of those old-fashioned, burly number nines. He'll get his head where it hurts, and I'm expecting that goal-scoring form not to continue today, in fairness. I do think Manchester City will win, but over the season, if Mitrovic stays fit, he's a good player, Mitrovic. He'll get 15
goals. Any thoughts on why Newcastle jettisoned his...
Just Rafa Benitez didn't like him. There's accusations. He is temperamental. He's had sending offs and he's had runs with the various referees in the Premier League, and just his style didn't quite fit for Rafa. did it ever. Rafa just wasn't convinced by him. On the other hand, he's now working with a compatriot of his in Jokanovic, who's done a great job at Fulham. He believes in him, and when you believe in someone like Alexander Mitrovic, who wears his heart on his sleeve, he goes out there and he produces the goods.
The other bit of news for you, Jamie Vardy's back for Leicester as well. Foxes see him return from his ban, so you won't be seeing pictures of him and his missus up in the bleachers, around the grounds, enjoying themselves, parties and all. There's also action over in Spain for you, as well as, I said, Barcelona kicking off in around about 15 minutes' time. It's Real Sociedad against Barcelona. Valencia taking on Betis a little later on, and then Athletic Bilbao take on Real Madrid 10:45 this evening. They're off and running over in Germany at the moment. Bayern Munich already 2-1 to the good against Bayer Leverkusen down there. Also goals for Leipzig against Hanover, one apiece there in that game. And Inter Milan are playing Parma as we speak. Half time in that one, no goals to report there. You've got games in the French Ligue 1, games over in Italy, games across Europe, and of course the Gallagher Premiership also kicking off in just a few moments' time. That's it from The Grill this Saturday. Do hope you've enjoyed the show. Thanks very much indeed for your interaction, for your input. As always, fellas, enjoy the rest of your sporting weekend. Chris McCarty, thank you all.
Thank you very much, Tom. Off to the cricket now.
Let's go down there, shall we?
Yeah.
Let's Robbie, you're in. Come on, Rob. You're driving.
Let's do it.
Thanks very much indeed to Robbie Greenfield as well for joining us live. We're going to head down to see Bangladesh against Sri Lanka at the Dubai International Cricket Stadium. Thank you for your patronage and presence and company this afternoon. Big thanks to Heck and all the team. Thanks, Benji, for pressing the buttons. And, of course, Viva Las Vegas back in the studio as well. That's it from us. Back next Saturday from 3 till then. Ta-ra.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.